Welcome to Healthcare IT Today. I'm John Lin, together with my colleague and friend, Colin Hung. The world of technology and healthcare are ever-changing in new and novel ways, and that's why we love this stuff. So join us as we discuss the latest healthcare and health IT news, meshed together in new ways which help generate ideas and new perspectives. Plus, we'll have a little fun along the way. On today's episode, we'll be discussing health IT hits and misses. And yeah, this will be a fun argument. And be sure to follow the show on Twitter at the hashtag HITSM and our personal accounts at TechGuy and at Colin_Hung. Plus, check out our 15 years of health IT blog content at healthcareittoday.com. Today's topic is inspired by the start of baseball. Colin's a Toronto Blue Jays fan, and I'm a Rangers fan. And my prediction is that the Rangers will be a hit and the Blue Jays will be a miss. Oh!
Oh, we're starting it off already, John. I get it. That's okay. It's okay. It's just because we have a better lineup. It's all right. You're not really jealous. That's all.
To be honest, I haven't kept up. I've been too busy. But, you know, we can always hope. That's what fans do, right?
That's right. That's, we're early in the season. There's always room to hope. Unfortunately, we did lose 2 out of 3 to the Rangers. But yes, it's a long season, and it's kind of fun to see fans back in the stands. It's also a bit unnerving to see that many fans in the stands at Arlington Stadium. But yeah, it's the sign of summer, right? That baseball is back.
Yeah, I'm not sure if we want to all move to Texas or none of us want to move to Texas. But either way, it's some sign of normality, and I think that's a good thing.
It is a good thing, but. In the spirit of that, let's talk about a few health IT hits or misses. And maybe I'll start this one off, John, by putting this one out to you. Is remote patient monitoring a hit or miss right now?
So I think it's early. So this is a nice one because we're kind of predicting, I think, still. Is it going to be a hit or is it going to be a miss? Because I don't think there's enough data there to really say officially, yeah, this indicates that it is a hit or a miss. So, this is more of a prediction one. But my prediction on RPM, remote patient monitoring, is it's going to be a hit. In fact, I'm going so far as to say I could see remote patient monitoring being the key to primary care. And it's not quite a replacement for primary care, but it may be the door that basically pushes you into primary care and decides when you need primary care and when you don't, because it's going to replace a lot of those things that maybe we went to the primary care for, and even replacing urgent care and ED, which quite frankly, a lot of patients treat urgent care and the ED as their primary care. And it's going to replace those in many ways because remote patient monitoring is going to create a relationship with you. It's going to understand you over a period of time and you've had interaction with them. So they're going to better know how to direct your care than your primary care physician who sees you once a year for 15 minutes about a very specific chief complaint. So that's my prediction. RPM is a big hit and possibly a replacement or at least the door to primary care.
Wow. Interesting. I am a lot more pessimistic. I'm saying or predicting that remote patient monitoring technology is going to be a hit. I think with the cost of devices coming down, with the number of players from the consumer side, whether that's Samsung, Philips, Apple, or Google, I think the costs are going to go down. Functionality is going to go up. And I think patients will want this stuff in their home, right? Yeah. We're already comfortable ordering everything through Alexa and talking to our TVs. How hard is it going to be to have something monitoring falls and things like that, passively in the home? So I think technology-wise, going to definitely be a hit. But I'm actually saying that it's going to be a miss for a long time because I don't think the reimbursement is going to change to allow this to happen. I think people will want it to happen, but I think there's essentially going to be a financial disincentive to do this. Like, who's going to pay for this? I don't think payers are going to step up to the plate because I don't think there's enough proof yet that says if I do this, I don't have to pay for Y. So I think it's going to take a long time, a lot longer than people hope or want. But I think in the next few years, we're not going to see the uptick of this. We're not going to see the same rocket curve that we did for telehealth, for example. So I'm saying actually on that side, the adoption side, we're going to see a miss on remote patient monitoring for a while until somebody changes the reimbursement model.
Well, the devices need to get better for it to be more effective. Although it's amazing what they're doing. I mean, we even have ones that are listening to your voice and understanding from your voice your health. You have cameras that are watching and grabbing your temperature automatically. You have the, you know, Apple Watch, obviously, which is doing continuous ECG. I mean, so we're starting to see exciting things and breakthroughs, to your point, on the tech side of things. And you're right, it's complicated to understand what all of that swath of data means for you and how to address your health. And, you know, man, who am I to argue with reimbursement? I'm the guy that says follow the money. But that said, I think, you know, Medicare is the one that stepped up to the plate and said, hey, we're going to pay for this. And it would be great for other private insurance payers to come in on board and do something similar. And I think they're going to. I think they're going to do that eventually. And there's going to be enough meat on the bone there from the experience of Medicare that everyone else is going to say, yeah, we need to start doing this too. And I think doctors, if they create the right partnerships with RPM companies to be able to do this, they could benefit from it and push the payers to really start reimbursing it as well.
Yeah, I mean, I hope so. I mean, and you're right about the technology. It's definitely improving in leaps and bounds. I just think that the amount that they're reimbursing right now, it doesn't cover the cost of the device even in most cases, right? Like, and then on top of that, there's the actual payment to the physicians or whoever is the organization to actually monitor the information coming from these wonderful devices. So I don't think the amounts are quite right yet. It's a start. I agree that, you know, CMS thankfully has at least seen the light and put some money towards this. I just think, you know, when we get out of this COVID thing, you know, will the attention be put there? Will it remain there? It's uncertain. So that's why I'm saying it's a miss. I agree with you. I think in the long term, it will be, you know, something that, you know, is a new modality of care, but I think we're still a few years away from it being a bona fide hit.
I think the other thing that's exciting is seeing how much of the infrastructure is in place to really do this, and whether that's the people, the care managers that know how to assist with this. We're starting to see that get put in place, but also even, you know, organizations like Lenovo who are willing to put the devices in the consumer's hands so that the health system doesn't have to do that. I mean, they've been doing it for their own employees and they don't really want to be in that business. Whereas Lenovo has been putting consumer devices in consumers' hands forever. So I think there's great progress there as well that allows a health system to put the device in the person's hand to be able to do the remote patient monitoring effectively. And those partnerships are just going to flourish when it comes to it, so that, you know, the health system does what it does best. And companies like Lenovo or other organizations can do what they do best, which is delivering the consumer device, creating a great experience for the patient so that they turn it on and it just works and they have connectivity, which, you know, really that's actually our next topic. So it's a good transition, which is 5G, which I think is going to enable remote patient monitoring, but it's also really powerful within the organization to be able to allow an organization to have high-speed internet across multiple campuses. So let's talk about that. 5G, is it a hit or miss in your book?
Definitely a hit. And I think a couple of reasons for that. First of all, the technology is solid, right? I mean, the low latency, the amount of data that you can transmit at the speeds that you can transmit it, at least at the high band 5G, is going to be just incredible. It's probably a little overkill for most healthcare uses, but for remote patient monitoring, for the ability to have remote surgery, you know, those robots and things like that, drones that deliver life-saving medications, all these things will require the 5G networks. And then also just personal 5G, you know, installing those kinds of antennas and repeaters and things inside the hospital will allow the hospital to be just that much more connected with all the IoT and everything that's going in there. So in my mind, you know, the technology's solid, the cost is right. You know, I think 5G is going to be a hit. It's going to take a little bit of time to make the investments, don't get me wrong, and install the new towers and things, but I'm definitely banking on this being a hit.
Yeah, your point about bandwidth is interesting because we don't really need it for most applications that we're doing. But what's interesting is every time we've upgraded speed of the network, we've used that speed. And so in many ways, implementing 5G and what it brings is going to enable innovations that before we would have just not even been able to think about. For example, if we're doing any sort of radiology or imaging, everyone's like, well, it's got to be on site. I need this local and I need this, you know, certain speed. Well, if we have 5G that goes all the way to the cloud, like, do we need that anymore? And will that lower the cost where we can do those type of large files, whether it's imaging, whether it's genomic information that obviously gets in the massive sizes as well? Could we do that from the cloud using 5G? Yeah, I mean, I think we will eventually. That's that we've proven. It's kind of like when you buy a house, right? If you buy this enormous house and you move from a 2-bedroom apartment to a 4-bedroom house, and you're like, how am I going to fill this space? And then a year later, you're like, oh man, we're just full. It's kind of similar, right? Like when you roll out 5G. So I'll say, you know, yeah, I think there are some challenges. There's some expenses that many people don't understand associated with 5G. So I'm going to give it 2 years to really fully mature. And then I think it's going to be a big hit where everyone's going to be like, well, of course we're using 5G. Just like now we say, of course we're using Wi-Fi. You know, two years from now, I think everyone's going to be like, well, yeah, you're not using 5G. You have a mobile phone that doesn't do 5G. What are you talking about?
Yeah, no, definitely. And you're right about the whole, there needs to be some investments made. I mean, you know, there's companies out there like Corning, for example, that's talking about, you know, the need to have fiber running into the facility in order for you to even then have your own endpoint 5G networks inside the hospital, because it needs to connect to the internet. You need a high-speed pipe in order to do that. You need fiber in order to handle that volume of stuff going into the cloud. But the good news is, of course, the antennas and those kinds of things for 5G, they're smaller, right? They don't have to be mounted on those giant poles outside. You need more of them. But the benefits that you'll be able to get, I think, from these, from the bandwidth and from the zero latency is going to be amazing. And to your point, there will be new inventions that we're not even thinking of that will suddenly be able to, you will now be able to take advantage, right? Like, for example, like, you know, it wasn't until 4G came along that really video on your phone became a thing, right? Yeah, because true. Before that, it was not like you would not sit there on a 3G network and try to download a video, which just wasn't possible. So although we had YouTube, no one could watch it, right? Like on their phone. You had to wait to get home to your laptop. Now it's like most videos are viewed on the phone. And now we have applications like TikTok and so forth that were only possible because of 4G. Now you could argue whether that's a good thing or a bad thing, but I think the same thing will happen. 5G will roll out. We'll be like, oh, this is great. It's, you know, my YouTube is faster, but I really don't see the difference. It's not until a couple of years later, then we'll start to see the innovation. And that's what I'm excited for. And that's why I'm saying definitely it's going to be a hit.
Yeah. And it may get held back because so many people have invested in big Wi-Fi networks and they may not understand 5G and the needs of 5G and how to roll it out. And so that may slow things a little bit, but eventually it's all going to go that way.
I agree. Hey, if you're listening, if you're just tuning in, you're listening to Healthcare IT Today with John Lin and Colin Hung. Today, we're talking about health IT hits and misses. And if you enjoy listening to our show, we think you'll really enjoy the Healthcare Wrap podcast with our friends, Jared Johnson and Zane Ismail. The Healthcare Wrap has been discussing digital transformation in healthcare for more than 3 years and 150 episodes. Each week, Jared and Zane share provocative thinking for healthcare innovators and digital teams with a fresh, unique style. And yes, there is actual wrapping. So please subscribe today to Healthcare Wrap on Alexa, Spotify, Apple, or anywhere where you listen to podcasts. So John, we've talked about remote patient monitoring. We just talked about 5G. I want to talk about this one because it's near and dear to my heart because it's, I came from this space. But what do you think about texting patients? Has that been a hit or a miss?
Well, I feel after talking about the Healthcare Wrap podcast, my answer should be in wrap form, or do we text a wrap to the patients to engage the patient?
I think Jared has a non-disclosure, like a exclusive arrangement on wrapping.
Oh, so we can't.
Yeah. So we can't do it. Yeah.
It's probably good for us. Probably good for our listeners.
Probably good thing.
No, but I think it's interesting because people underestimate the power of a text message. At first, when I looked at it, I know I did. I was like, Yeah, well, I mean, can you really do everything you need to in a text? And we've kind of proven that, yeah, you can do a lot more than you realize. And whether that's, you know, sharing long threads of messages with a doctor or with a patient, or whether it's sending a link with an attachment in the text that links to the resource that you really want them to get access to or they want to be able to see, like, it's so much more powerful than we realize, because with the number of characters in a text and a link, you can do just about everything. So I think that, you know, in that mind, I think it's a huge hit. I think it's only a miss because some doctors don't embrace it, right? And so, you know, I guess, you know, it's the fact that they're not stepping up to the plate to take a swing at the bat, you know, is where the miss is. But, you know, for anyone that's using it, they've seen the value of it and they see that it's a huge hit with their patients.
So to sort of leverage our baseball analogy, I look at texting patients as a really, really hot hitter that's now currently in a slump.
Oh, okay.
So it, in general, I agree with you. It is a hit. I think people have really realized the fact that, yeah, you can do a lot with texting that we never imagined when it first came on the scene. And, you know, I know we started, you know, the world with appointment reminders and things, but now we're into like patient education. You can, yeah, you know, text links to ask them to go to the portal to go check out a resource. You can even send that resource right in the text. You can have automated conversations with chatbots via text. Like, there's a whole bunch of things you can do via text. And in countries where there isn't the powerful infrastructure of Wi-Fi, texting is sort of the only tool, right? Like, it's the only mechanism that you have, and everyone's got it. You don't have to download any special apps and things. So I definitely think from that side it's a hit. But I think, unfortunately, what's happened is it's been implemented in a very weird, strange way. And now we're in a spot where it's actually not so great. Hmm. What I mean by that is every app, every system has the ability to text patients, right? So your surgical system has like, oh, you know, pre-surgery, I'm going to text the patients the instructions. And then you're like, the appointment system that you have is emailing or texting people to say, well, you know, you should go to the portal. And so literally as a patient, I could get 6 or 7 texts a day from the same hospital for very different reasons, or even for the same appointment, but they're coming from different subsystems. And so today there's no sort of master text traffic cop that's sitting there going, hey, wait a minute, you're trying to text John. Like, this is the 5th text you're sending him. Why couldn't we just consolidate this into one text and given you a link to everything? Like, I think that's where we're at now, is we've got so many systems texting patients that it's starting to lose its effect. So I think we're heading for that. I think some hospitals are experiencing this right now that have a lot of these systems turned on. I think others are just starting to pick that up. So that's why I think texting is sort of in the middle of a slump.
Yeah, it reminds me of all the alert fatigue discussion with texting with doctors and nurses and all of that. Although I think it's just different with a patient, and maybe it's, you know, I think maybe COVID made it possible for us to just say, oh yeah, we're used to it, because I got the text from the restaurant that says I'm checked in, and then the text to say I have 5 minutes, and then I get a text to say it's ready. And so, you know, and texts are so easy to go through. You know, I mean, the same thing happens with my kids' school. I get a text, I get a phone call, and they leave a message, and then they send me an email. And, you know, it's slightly annoying. You know, I'm kind of like, yeah, why do I do this? But then I'm also like, eh, at least I'd rather have 3 messages telling me this rather than none. And so I think we're kind of used to it. And so you just pass through it. And you know, sure, would it be nice if they do that? You know, we had the same thing with my daughter's orthodontist, 3 messages about what the new COVID protocol is. And, you know, it's slightly annoying, but for the most part, you look at it, oh yeah, I saw that, great. Now, where it does get confusing is when one text says something and then the next text says something different. Now there's a problem. So as long as the messages are consistent across it so that I don't miss one because I think, oh, it's the same message, and you're like, oh no, it was slightly different, show up 15 minutes early or something, then we have problems. But I think people would rather have over communication than under communication, as long as it's consistent communication.
No, I agree. You're definitely right on that point. I think most patients would not complain, but it does become an issue when there's conflicting information. You know, minor ones like, hey, show up 30 minutes or 15 minutes. I'm not really sure. More concerning will be, hey, book your appointment through this link, which brings you to a different portal, and then, or this one, right? And mm-hmm. you go to two different systems, then you're like, which one, where am I booking the appointment? Maybe I'm thinking I'm booking with my oncologist, but I'm actually booking with my primary care. Like, it can be confusing if we're not careful. So I think we'll eventually get there, but I think we are sort of going through a little bit of text fatigue, I guess you can say, where some organizations are saying, wow, we really do text their patients a lot of stuff. Maybe that should be a little bit more coordinated.
Yeah, we should ask the ratings websites and see how many patients have complained about too much communication. I bet it's not very many.
I'm going to say probably not a lot. So let's go to the next one, John. And this is obviously very topical right now. Info blocking. Is info blocking a hit or a miss in terms of what it was trying to accomplish, I guess?
Yeah, I mean, this is a hard one. It's another prediction one, since it depends on how they embrace it. So are healthcare organizations going to embrace this idea that patients deserve access to their information and that they're going to just make it available? And that's true to third parties as well. And, you know, I'm going to say it's kind of a single, you know, it's definitely not a home run. It's nowhere near grand slam for sure, but you know, it's a single. It gets us, you know, it gets us on base, and, you know, we'll see what happens after that. We're going to need more after it, right, to really score, you know, some points for patients. But it's a single, it's a step in the right direction, it's progress. But so, you know, it's a slight hit, but you know, we didn't strike out. At least we're not sitting back on the bench wondering what the heck happened.
I think some vendors or some hospitals probably look at this info blocking as actually a hit by a pitch. It's sort of like, I'm sitting at first base, but it's pretty painful to get here.
That's interesting.
But I agree. I think it is a step in the right direction. Obviously, there's still a lot to come, and there's going to be hopefully some refinements as we continue to move down it. But I think something had to be done. I mean, there was just too much demand and too much inaction, if you will, or lack of action, that the government really did have to step in. So now that we have it, now that it's arriving and, you know, or it's here, you know, I think people are adapted to it. The world didn't collapse, right? You know, no one's, you know, nothing really, really horrible has happened so far. So yeah, I think we will definitely adapt to it eventually. I'm not even sure, though, to your point, if it ever will be a huge hit. I just think it's one of these things where, you know, it will spawn other compliance or regulations down the road that will then take us to where we need to go in terms of releasing the information into the hands of the patients.
Yeah, it's opening the door. I think it's directionally accurate, but you know, there's still a lot of work to be done. And you know, there's also, we're dealing with the ambivalence of patients, which I think is always challenging. So you can have the right policies, but if the patient doesn't care, then what?
Then what? Yeah. Let's go down memory lane, John, for this one. It's a throwback.
Nice. Get ready for this vintage one. Jerseys.
Yeah, that's right. It's our third jerseys, the vintage jerseys. And that is meaningful use. Was that a hit or miss looking back on that one?
Yeah. So I kind of look at meaningful use, which, you know, to be honest, personally, and for healthcare IT today, it's a hit. I mean, we wouldn't be here if it weren't for meaningful use. So maybe I'm biased in this, but I mean, I think for the industry as a whole, I kind of see it as like a sacrifice fly, you know, that it was kind of this necessary pain to create progress. Should we have done a lot more with $36 billion? Yeah, absolutely. Right. It wasn't even a sacrifice fly with the person on third base to get him home to score a run. It's a sacrifice fly with him on first that moved him to second, right? So I guess if we're continuing the analogy, I guess that's not considered a hit. It's I guess it is a miss, but it did provide some progress. You know, it did provide a platform that, hey, now we're all on EHR, and it's allowing for some discussions that wouldn't have been possible had we not done meaningful use and really pushed adoption of EHR.
Yeah, I mean, I think for me, meaningful use achieved what it set out to achieve, which is to digitize and get everyone onto an electronic platform. Yeah. And if we remember back to when it first started, you know, the adoption rate of electronic records was under, you know, 25% or 30%, depending on which numbers you looked at. It was low. And even then, I would say the numbers were generous, because it was like, you know, if you had like one part of your operation on digital health, you know, an EHR or Exactly. You know, you count, it counted, right? So it took something like meaningful use and the massive influx of dollars and the compliance requirements to really move the industry forward. And I think it was the right stick and carrot to get us there. But, you know, should we have gotten more value out of that, you know, billions that we spent? Absolutely. I think from that point, it was kind of a little disappointing. We only got, the only thing we did was we got everyone up to like, now we're all electronic, but no one talks to each other still. And we have all these data issues. But now at least we have data issues, right? Like, you know, we're not talking about paper records still and faxing, you know, as the only solution. Now we're at least talking about, boy, I've got so many silos. How do I consolidate it? How do I make sense of all this information? How do I normalize this data that I now have my hands around? And so I think those are good problems to have. Just I think people will look back and probably go, yeah, we probably should have gotten more for that billions of dollars.
Well, and I think the challenge is everyone wanted, so here's what doctors really wanted from an EHR. Oh, you can just do my documentation for me? Great. I would love that. You know, oh, you'll make all the records interoperable just automatically because we went electronic. We went to EHR and now I have all the information that I would need at the point of care from whatever health system I want. Yeah, that would have been great. We all agree that those two things would have been wonderful. The problem was, if that was your expectation, then you didn't understand the industry. You didn't understand that it takes steps to get to those points, right? And could we have done a better job? Absolutely. I mean, should we have been more interoperable than we are today? Absolutely. But these are steps forward that were needed to be taken in order to have those discussions. You don't just jump from home to third base, you know, you got to run around the bases. So, you know, it's painful. Should we be better? Absolutely. I wish we were, and I think we will be, but you know, I think we're headed in a direction that's really interesting. And I think over these next 5 to 10 years, well, it's going to be interesting. The influence of the EHR may decrease in many ways. We'll have an increase of other things that are more influential, but it is an important stepping stone.
Yeah, I think to end on this analogy, I would say I would compare meaningful use to overpaying for a free agent, right? And then having a disappointing season. You're like, well, yeah, I got a few runs and a few RBIs, but I really kind of overpaid for what I got.
It was a pitcher that started 10 games, but you know, they didn't quite deliver. Yeah, that's
exactly. Exactly. Hey, listen, thanks to all of you who tuned into this episode of Healthcare IT Today. You can find out more details about our show by checking out the programs page on healthcarenowradio.com. And please share your voice and engage with the community at healthcareittoday.com and on Twitter using the hashtag HITSM. I'm Colin Hung with my friend and health IT collaborator, John Lin. Thanks for listening. Have a great week.